Now, the Wisconsin Historical Society's labor archive is massive. They have millions of documents related to the history of organized workers and movements in the U.S. and beyond. And these materials are actually accessible to you, the curious public. Lee Grady joins us, archivist with the Historical Society, joining us to tell us more about what's in the collection and how we can go about learning from it. Lee, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, before we visit the collection today, can you talk about the origin story here? This was an early effort, it seems like, to really document America's labor history.
It really is. It actually started in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins University. It was a professor named Richard Ely was writing a book. He wrote a book in 1886 about the American labor movement already at that point. So that's very early. There really isn't a discipline of labor history on university campuses. So he's one of the pioneers. And then he was going to work on a much larger book of the history of industrial society in America. And he ran against a roadblock. He couldn't find sources. So he determined then to start building his own collection. This was in the 1880s, late 1880s. 1892, he came to the University of Wisconsin. He brought what he had started with him and then really got going with it. At the university here, we already had John R. Commons, who was another founder of labor history and economics in studies. He was a former student of Ely. And together, they started a really intensive collecting effort, starting around, 1892. By 1910, they had amassed really what was the only really big, thorough collection of labor history in the United States. That's sort of the origin. The papers that were collected for the university out of the economics department, the Historical Society building where we are now, that's 816 State Street here in Madison. We shared it with the university at that time. So it was half university library, half historical society. So those early labor documents were stored in the same building as us. And then once they had finished collecting and were ready to do research and writing, they gave us that collection that they had put together, John R. Commons and Richard Ely.
And I imagine you hit a critical mass at some point where once you've got a collection like that, there's a gravity that you start pulling in other stuff and people want to donate and add to that collection.
There really is. We started to get a reputation nationally for having a labor history collection. So obviously people then start contacting us. I hear you have a labor history collection. Also, if we go out and talk to people, national labor unions, national figures, we have some clout and credibility because we can say we have Albert Parsons papers. We have, American Federation of Labor or whatever it is. We have these big names. And so people are eager to add their collections to those.
Now, whether it's 1880 or 2019, how does a scholar or an archivist know, hey, this is something. This is something that we're going to want to keep around, and maybe in 50 years, a researcher is going to want to look at this.
It's a real trick. I have like to think my predecessor did a pretty good job of that, trying to identify what is going to be important. In terms of Wisconsin history, it's a little easier because we're the only place really collecting broadly in Wisconsin. So we collect almost everything Wisconsin history. When we collect national things like labor, we have to be a lot more selective. We can't be another Smithsonian or Library of Congress. We don't have the space, or the staff for that. So we decide, we collect in civil rights, we collect in mass communications, we collect in Hollywood film and theater, and labor is another one of those national things. And at every one of those cases, at some point, our staff looked around and, thought about what was current, what was happening. We collect in the moment, so what is really shaping our current society? Things like mass communications are obvious, but in the 1950s especially, so this is after John R. Commons and Richard Ely were really pioneers. They were forward thinking because labor was emerging then, but it wasn't established. By the time it was established, really 1930s, 40s, and 50s, that's when the society really jumped in, the Historical Society, and saw that labor was a major shaping force in the history of the United States and the development of the United States. It was a major force politically, and that somebody, it made sense for us to continue documenting it because we had that early start. We had a big head start on it. So that's the time where they sort of look around and say, this is important. The other question is anybody else doing it? Because obviously we don't want to duplicate what other places are doing. So we staked out certain areas, and one of them was labor. We already had our foot in there. Other places weren't doing it as extensively as we were. So that's kind of what brought us to that.
Now, I imagine you could answer this next question for an hour or 5 hours, but
happily,
give us a sense of the scope of the material that has been assembled now.
Well, it's millions and millions of pages, hundreds of collections. I know as early as the late 1970s, we already had like collections of 150 different Wisconsin labor organizations alone. That would be like local unions, federated groups of unions, Wisconsin Labor Federation, things like that. You go beyond that to national collections, and it's major unions like the Teamsters, the Textile Workers of America, Amalgamated Meat Cutters, as I said, the American Federation of Labor. That alone, that collection alone is 500,000 pages. And so as a whole, I don't know exactly how many collections there are. There are hundreds of them. We have an online catalog that describes all of those collections, and lots of people use them, from middle schoolers doing National History Day projects. So middle schooler isn't going to write about the labor movement necessarily, but unions documented a lot of things about workplaces and work and manufacturing. So a student might come in interested in meat processing, and the Amalgamated Meat Cutters Union took wonderful photos of workers, you know, processing meat in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. There's a lot of different ways people use them. So that's what we're all about.
Talking to Lee Grady with the Wisconsin Historical Society, talking about their extensive labor collection. And so the materials, you mentioned photos. There might
yes.
be photos.
Mm-hmm.
There might be, what, minutes of that local union's meeting? What
exactly.
other kind of thing?
Exactly, yeah. Minutes, financial ledgers, letters and memos back and forth, letters between union heads talking about strategy, talking about politics. I had one collection I have worked in myself is the Pulp and Paper Workers collection. And one of the best things in there were the reports of agents that were in the field. So that we have the papers of the New York office, and they would send agents out all over the United States. And one place, for example, Green Bay, I was looking at an agent that was sent from New York to Green Bay to help start up a union in 1930 in Green Bay. And I still remember the detailed reports back to the home office, you know, talking about all the conditions in Green Bay at the time, all the challenges of getting people interested in the union at that time. And I still fondly remember this letter he wrote, this union organizer from New York, saying, "You don't understand what it's like here. I'm trying to get people to come to a meeting on a Sunday. Forget it. It's all about the Packers." This is 1930, okay? But I still remember. I mean, those are really rich because they have to, you know, people are not communicating by email or phone at that time. It's letters. So you have to pack in a lot of information in these reports that are going back to the home office, give the management back there a really good idea of what it's like from an outsider to come into Green Bay or to come into Madison or Milwaukee or any place where there's a union local being started.
So there might be that school kid coming in for their local report. There might be a Wisconsin researcher doing state or local history. I understand, though, people are coming from all over to check this stuff out.
That's true. We have people from all over the world, especially in the summer, a lot of researchers leaving their own campuses from as far away as Japan, or we have Chinese researchers, German researchers. There's somebody from France there today as we speak, but also all around the United States. And then students that are Wisconsin high school and middle schoolers, and graduate students and undergraduates. And then people do TV documentaries and just writing books, a lot of traveling authors.
Lee, thank you so much for sharing with us. Really interesting.
Oh, sure. No problem.
That's Lee Grady, archivist with the Wisconsin Historical Society. We talked to him about the Society's vast collection of materials that document the history of organized labor.